Welcome to Impact You. Conversations helping you create your leadership ripple effect. Let the learning begin.
Welcome to Impact You. I'm thrilled you're joining us today, and I am here with my pal and colleague, Tony Bodo, with Tony Bodo International. Welcome, Tony.
Good morning, Kayla.
Good morning. We're in a three-part series about the customer experience, and today is part two of our conversation. And when we were together last, we talked about defining for our listeners what it means to focus on the customer experience in your business. And Tony, one of the things you shared with us last time was that your customers at the core level have certain needs and wants from your business, and they reveal those to you through their interactions, through their comments, and perhaps in things that they don't say in every interaction they have with our business. And you helped us understand that a bit last time, and our listeners may be tuning in today to say, I'm not quite sure what all of this means. So if you could, for a few moments before we get started with today's conversation, tell our listeners what you and your team do at Tony Bodo International.
Absolutely, Kayla. We are a consulting firm that specializes in understanding and interpreting customer experience for clients, specifically for companies that are Fortune 1000 and also for fast-growing startups, companies that are on the track to be in the Fortune 1000 in a few years. And we're really focused on these clients because they have a lot of customer feedback that comes in, but they don't often know what it means when it comes in. And so in simplest terms, say that we give the executives of these companies X-ray vision into the hearts and minds of their customers so that they can really understand the needs, wants, and desires of their customers before their competitors do. And by doing this, what it allows is that the company can take action faster. They can solve problems. They can innovate new products or services. They can really distinguish themselves in the marketplace before their competitors do. And we do that by really understanding the hidden patterns that are in the language used to communicate with the customer, uses it to communicate with the company, or in the behaviors that show through in their sales behaviors or their non-taker, when they don't buy, those types of behaviors. And so we study this, we put it all together, we come up with an interpretation of what's happening in the heart and mind of the customer.
And with that information, you are equipping these executives and these business leaders to do something unique and different in their business, which is certainly going to drive buying patterns. It's going to drive revenue. It's going to drive repeat business. And what we talked about last time is really a different type of loyalty, because the customer is so tuned in and responsive to what the customers need.
Absolutely. So last time we talked about how the customer, you know, in today's world, most companies are focused on the transaction and satisfaction within the transaction itself, whereas where we're headed in the economy right now is toward success or even long-term significance, leaving a life of legacy. And this is more important to customers today. And so therefore, we need to focus on this in every transaction, every communication, everything we do with the client or with the customer.
So it's much more than a focus on customer service. We're talking about a real experience that the customers have with the business, correct?
Correct.
So I would encourage for our folks who are tuning in today, listen to part one. So you're going to hear a little bit more about the context that Tony's describing for us of defining what does customer experience mean? What kinds of information could you begin to gather from your customers? And so today in segment two, I would love for us to focus, Tony, in our conversation of, okay, you've gathered some information from your customers through whatever method you've chosen to do. And that could be something that is manual. It could be something that you've used technology for, minimum investment, or spend a lot of money to do that. But you've gathered information from your customers. So the question would come back to our business leaders, what do you do with that information that you've gathered? It's that now what moment. So what does that look like for you?
That's a great question. It really depends on what the feedback is telling you, what this information is telling you. So as an example, you may get feedback from someone that you're website has a broken button. They're trying to make a purchase and something breaks down in the process. And, you know, this is one of those debatable things. Should they go fix it or not? Well, yes, you should go fix it. That, you know, one person telling you that it's broken doesn't make it any less broken than 100 people telling you it's broken. But you've probably been losing sales but haven't heard anything about it. So the things like that to keep your business going, you've got to fix those immediately. And I have a particular client I worked with, and it took us 18 months to convince them the project was worthwhile fixing. It was a website-related issue, and the same thing happened. And that's too long. You've lost business. You've lost credibility. You lost loyalty. But in for the most part, if you really take a step back and you look from a strategic perspective and you say, what is it I need to do for my customers today? And how do we prepare for that next stage of growth of our company? Then you, when you look at what the feedback says, you really want to be looking at it from a perspective of what are the major trends. And I really extrapolate out and say, okay, it's not just about what's being said in the feedback, but it's taking that step back to this higher level and in getting an understanding of what's going on in the life of the customer.
So help our listeners understand, you used a term, the life of your customer. What does that mean?
So typically when you would look at feedback, a lot of people would look at feedback and actually read what's written right there, or they would listen to the call and they would hear the words that are said. What they're not conscious of, because they're so caught up in the business that they work in 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day, they keep thinking that the customer is seeing it from the business's perspective, when in fact the customer is engaging with the company for just a matter of moments in any given day, or, you know, maybe a few minutes any given month. So they've got this whole life outside of that, 24 hours in the day, and they may call you and talk to you for 5 minutes. You're not a significant component of their life from the perspective of time, but how you engage them emotionally, you could become one of those moments of their day that makes their day or even makes their week. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second, because just this week it was released that Facebook did a major social experiment on their website. And what they revealed was that in the posts, if a user of Facebook saw posts that were either positive or negative, it would have an effect on the posts that they would write themselves over the next week.
So if it was something negative, then they would in turn post more negative posts about themselves or their activities for the coming week. Is that correct?
Exactly. And I know there's a whole debate over privacy and everything else, but the reality is this. If a Facebook post or a series of negative posts that show up on your feed can affect you up to a week later and how your perspective on life a week later is, think about what a bad customer experience can do to a person long term. It can affect them for a week or more afterwards.
Or they make a decision, I will never do business with them again because of that one instance or that one interaction I had with them.
Exactly. And that brings up a great point, because I often have to remind my clients that customers are not statisticians. And I have to remind the executives of these companies who are begging for statistics and we need thousands of pieces of feedback before we can do anything on this. I tell them, no, when's the last time you went to a restaurant for the first time and never went back? Or for the first time and recommended someone go back with you because of the positive or negative experiences you had? You're not being a statistician in those cases. You're being a human being. And this goes to behavioral economics. Behavioral economics has recognized that we don't act as logical beings. We act as emotional beings who reason to the way why we did something, as opposed to logical beings who feel good about something we reasoned to.
So even for our analytical, very driven thinking business leaders out there, at the end of the day, so many of these decisions that our customers are making are going to be tied to an emotional experience that they have. How did that business make me feel?
Exactly. And it really has to, because what happens is the emotions fire about a half second before you can reason anything. So unless you have a very, very powerful mind and will, the emotions are going to dictate how you reason after you have the feeling.
That's a very deep thought. We could stop right there, right? And
exactly.
Just let everybody think about that and process that a bit. So I want to go back to a statement you said then. We're gathering data from our customer interactions, trying to understand what they're telling us or what they're not telling us, perhaps. So am I hearing you correctly in that there's not necessarily a certain set of data or amount of data that a customer needs? It depends on what that customer's telling us. So maybe it's one complaint about a website not working versus we've gathered lots of data and information from our customers on maybe where we need to go in the business. Are we hearing you correctly that it's not a set checklist that you're getting to? Now you have enough information to move or to act.
Absolutely. And so the example I used of a website being broken, right? If you get one piece of feedback, it's broken. Now, it may be broken for that server, that browser, whatever it may be, but you've got to go fix that problem, identify what it is. When you take a step back from that and you say, okay, let's take an example of a strategic question like, what do millennials think of us? Or what do Gen Xers think of us? Or how do we get more Gen Xers to buy our product or service? You know, when you ask those types of questions, you really got to go to the level of statistical significance. And by that, I mean, you've got to look at how much feedback you're getting in. Is it representative of the population that you're trying to research? Is it representative of your customer group as a whole, your customer base as a whole? And so there are statistical tools that we don't need to get in here, but there's statistical tools that you can use to help you figure that out. But in general, what I tell clients, if you're getting a few hundred pieces of feedback in a week or a month, read them all. Read everything that comes in the door, because the more you read, the more you're going to understand and you're going to feel and you're going to empathize with the customers and you'll be able to make the right decisions. On the other hand, I have clients who have over 500,000 pieces of feedback in a given month. And so we use statistical tools to say what would be a representative sample for the particular research project we're working on. As an example, what are millennials saying to us? I've kind of developed over the years of doing this for, you know, been doing this for 7 years. I said, okay, what's a simpler way we can do this? Because sometimes time frame, we will have an executive say, I need an answer by the end of the day. And so I've coined a term called the 2-hour research. And 2 hours means, what do I already know? Mm-hmm. I don't have time to do any original research. What is it I already know? Then there's the 2-day research. And from a 2-day research perspective, I can maybe pull in a little bit more information. I might be able to start tapping into what else do people know around the company, you know, other researchers. I may be able to do a little bit of original research and kind of get a directional perspective. But I have to caveat and say, this is not statistically valid. This is just directional. You have to be careful on the decisions you make with directional data. The next level is really the 2-week. And that's where I really get into doing statistics-based research and really understanding with my team what's happening, what does this represent, what does this mean? And there's a good direction you can give a client at that point in time on where to go. But really the core is the 2-month research project. And now people look at that and say, well, that's way too long. In reality, the amount of information you can provide, we've been able to help companies identify over $500 million in opportunity from one of those 2-month research projects. And it's really that type of research where you actually look at competitive intelligence and you look at user experience studies and you look at the customer feedback. You know, you go to all these different areas that the company may have information, which we talked about last time. There's information all over the company. We look at sales patterns and behaviors of takers versus non-takers. All of these things can be brought together in a 2-month study where you begin to really say, what's the strategy of the organization? And the further you move down this path from 2-hour to 2-month, the different phases there, you're moving from fixing a tactical problem like a button on the website, which is important, to actually tapping into how is it that the customer or how is it that the person facing the customer is thinking. And it's getting to that thinking level. And when you change the thinking of an organization, you change the behavior of an organization, which changes how the customers interact with the organization.
And it's those building blocks. It's how in depth do we want to look at our business or the opportunity for growth or what missed opportunities are out there we don't even know about yet. You know, and let's face it, we have leaders listening to us today to say, my world is at breakneck speed. And there's so many things going on in our business. We just need to get sales. Or we just need to take care of that customer because the world doesn't slow down for us. And what I'm hearing you say to our leaders today, there are times that a quick response is going to be what you need to respond to the yells and the screams of our customers. Something's not working, fix it. But in many instances, to really make that transformational change, it's digging much, much deeper, and you've got to pull lots of information together. And that may be something the business can do themselves, or perhaps they could reach out to you to say, help us do this. We don't understand even where to begin to do this.
Right. And it's something you said there was really key to me, and that is if a business is going at breakneck speed, that's a challenge that I understand they're facing. But if they were to pause for a moment and really think about it and say, okay, if I reduced my attrition rate, or the converse, increased my retention rate by 10%, that means I don't have to spend all of that money marketing, getting new customers, building relationships, all of that. Now, if I spend the money, I get even more customers, but I'm not losing the base I've worked so hard to build. On the sales side, if I understand why customers are saying no to me, why they aren't purchasing, why they aren't converting at whatever level it is in the sales funnel, if I can tweak those levels in the sales funnel by 1%, 2%, 10%, because I know how to speak to them differently, how to communicate more effectively in my marketing copy or in something in how my sales flow is designed, that means I have to focus on getting fewer customers in the top of the funnel, and I still get more customers out the bottom of the funnel. So in fact, if you're working at breakneck speed, that is symptomatic that you need help.
Excellent. We're talking about a very strategic issue for our teams and in the businesses today. This is not responding to your customer complaint line.
Exactly.
We really are talking about strategy. So customers could tell us lots of information. You've shared some of those things along the way. Can you give me maybe two or three insights that you might learn from customers? So what could they be telling you as you begin to gather this data? Some examples you have found with clients that you serve today. What could that be?
Yeah, I'll take an example of a real simple example. I worked with a hotel company. They're actually an ownership group for a hotel company. And we looked at their survey or the feedback on TripAdvisor. So we used public resources to get there. And one of the things that we were able to identify is that there were hidden patterns in the language. Once we actually did the analysis, did some mind mapping and laid out what does the picture of this feedback look like? How are things moving in the feedback? We counted the number of types of feedback there were, and we did all those analytical things. But when we took a step back, what we began to recognize is a pattern. And for those customers those guests who would give a 5 on TripAdvisor, they were highly complimentary of the staff. They were telling how the staff went out of their way. Every single comment had something about how the staff made this experience wonderful. And then if we drop down to the 3s, and so out of 5, this is the mid-tier, mid-level, those who gave 3s were talking about the smells in the hotel. The facilities were in disrepair. They weren't what they had expected. The value for the price was fair. You know, it was a kind of a break even. It wasn't necessarily a great experience, but it wasn't the worst. But, you know, there was all this languaging around the facilities being in disrepair, and the price was fair. If you drop down to the 1s, this is where it got really interesting to me. The 1s, they felt that they had been robbed. And they used that language in the feedback. A few of the customers or guests actually used that language. And it was powerful because what they were saying is the facilities are so bad. You know, I was told there was a pool on site and the pool's not functional. And I wasn't told about that before I made my reservations or before I showed up. My room was in such disrepair. The sheets were you know, stained. The carpet was torn. The shower didn't work properly. Anything like this. Those are the types of things where they felt they were robbed and no one on staff cared. And that was critical. They wouldn't move them to a different room. They wouldn't do anything about it. They basically said, if you want to leave, go ahead and leave. And so this was really revealing to the hotel company. And from that, what we were able to do is basically say, now look at your hotel. Each of your hotels has a different profile. When you look at them, you can identify what you need to work on first. If you're getting a bunch of 1s, you need to do a major capital investment and renovate your property. Don't even worry about training the staff because there's no way your staff can overcome the disrepair you have in your property. When you look at a hotel that may have like mostly 3s, again, in that case, there's some work to be done on the property, but it's mostly probably preventative maintenance. It's not capital investments as much as it is process improvement and things like that. And then at the top tier, where you've got the highly complementary staff, keep doing what you're doing and take your staff training to the next level. And so we can prioritize the investment you make, and we can tell you where to make the investment when you understand what's being said.
And again, that goes back to what you described. There's a process. We're not just making a sharp decision, quick decision on one complaint that perhaps came through on our website, but we take a much deeper look at that. So you've mentioned, you know, prioritization. Where do we begin when we start to gather some of that data? So my question then would be, I think for our leaders who are listening to our conversations, is this all sounds well and good. Is there a real ROI for the time and the effort? And we know, absolutely, eventually we will get more sales, we will get more loyalty. How do you speak about all of this in terms of return on investment?
That is a great question. It's one that I deal with regularly. The best way to guarantee return on investment, I use the term guarantee loosely here, because there are no guarantees if you don't take action on what you learn. And let me be real clear about that. But the best way to get an ROI, a return on your investment, is to start with the end in mind. What metric do I want to move? Do I want to increase my sales? Do I want to increase my retention? Do I want to reduce the losses across the organization? Pick a metric, make a decision. And then once you understand that metric, you can go and find all of the feedback of customers who have gone through that process and affected the metric historically. And you look to their feedback. We talked a little bit about this last time, and so in session one. And really, if you understand, as an example, let's take the customers who have dropped the product with you, a subscription-based product or something like that, or they're not buying as frequently as they had before. If you can isolate them and look at the feedback that they gave you for 3 to 6 months prior to that, there's likely patterns of language in this feedback where they're telling you, you know, my budget's getting a little bit tight, what can I do? But they may not ask you a direct question. That's for you and your analysts to really be able to pick up and figure out what's the leading language that indicates the likelihood that they're going to leave your organization, they're going to go somewhere else, find a better price, or stop using this product or service in general. And so if you start with the end in mind, and this is where most of my clients, I have to really retrain them, because they're always focused on, how do I improve my satisfaction? How do I get, you know, move from 75% top scores to 80%? I really don't care about that. I know there's some value, net promoter scores and other things like that have shown proven value. The problem is they're disconnected at least 1 to 2 degrees from true ROI. So if I can move a lot of people who are complaining and solve those problems, it doesn't guarantee I'm going to get a return on the investment, because I haven't proven that those people who say they're going to recommend their friends and family, which is the core of net promoter score, actually go do what they say they will do in a moment of emotion. And that's what's critical about the disconnect between NPS, because it works for some companies and not for others. So what we do instead is we look at the core metric. What is it you really want to move in your organization aside from satisfaction? And then how do we move that? What has been said about the process related to that metric?
So is it possible then, from what I'm hearing you describe, that a business could actually change its strategy based on the feedback that they are receiving from customers?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And with an exclamation point.
Yes.
If you need to, yes right?
Yes. And in fact, I would say don't change your strategy until you understand what the customers are saying. A lot of companies, like you said earlier, there's that one letter that gets to the CEO or the chairman of the board, and they're like, well, we need to fix this now. Or the thing I find humorous quite frequently is that a friend of the CEO or the chairman of the board says, hey, I was trying to do this at your company and I had a problem. You know, then everything unleashes and we've got to fix this problem. And really, it may not be a problem for most of the people, because most of the customers don't look like that friend of the CEO. They may represent 0.1% of the total population, and you're making a strategic change that can impact the other 99.9% of the population.
But that individual had the ear of the CEO.
Exactly. And that's why it's called voice of the customer. And you create a team and a department to represent your customer base, not just one customer.
Excellent point. In fact, that's actually a really good wrap-up point for us today. So what would you say, out of our topic that we've had some great dialogue about, What's the one takeaway for a leader who's just listened to this message? What would you recommend as one takeaway or one action step based on our conversation today?
I would say decide what metric you want to improve. And when you decide what metric you want to improve, go find the customers who have gone through that process. And so let's say you want to reduce attrition. Look at the customers who's left your organization in the last month or 3 months, whatever it is. And then look back even further and look at the feedback that they gave you. And if you need to, you can go reach out to them, do a survey and that kind of thing. But really look back to what was said prior to the decision that they made, because there are subconscious clues in their language they didn't even know they were telling you. But if you're smart enough to look at it and to read enough of it, you will find them. And you'll be able to say, okay, when we see customers like this, saying things like this, we need to mitigate. We need to get in there and remedy the situation. What do we do? And that's really the starting point, I think, for any company that's looking at trying to solve this and get a true ROI in the process. I like to tell my clients, you know, when we're starting out an engagement, I want to earn my way. I don't want to tell you there's a, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 to get started here. Let me do a pilot for you. Let me help you earn your way. And this is exactly how we do it.
Wonderful. These are great building blocks for our leaders who are trying to get their arms wrapped around how do we get better? You know, how do we continue to attract and earn that loyalty from our customers? Tony, thank you so much. Tell our listeners quickly, how can they find you?
They can go to my website, which is www.tonyboto.com. That's TonyBodoh.com.
Wonderful. Tony, thank you so much for our conversation this morning.
Thank you, Kayla. I've appreciated it.
Thank you, guys. And thanks for tuning in today. This is part two of a three-part series on the customer experience. So we are thrilled that you took some time to spend a few moments with us. Stay tuned for our next segment where we will talk about how do you then connect all the information we have talked about around the customer experience and connect it to your employees. How do you make it real? So that'll be coming up on part three of our series. And thanks for listening.